Today on the Covenant Eyes podcast, we will be talking with Jeff and Marcia Fisher. Jeff was a pastor and a church planter who was habitually and secretly looking at pornography. Jeff eventually lost his job as a result. In today's portion of the interview, Jeff will talk about the cycle of addiction that gripped his heart for years.
I think a lot of times when I was in a lustful mode, I wasn't thinking straight. I had tunnel vision, and all I was thinking about was those images and those women, and how can I get the biggest sexual high here? When we sin, it's a step toward death and destruction. Taking more and more steps, or saying, well, I'm just going to give up and binge, that really is steps away from God and toward more destruction.
Jeff will also talk about how God broke that addictive cycle and a few of the lessons he has learned along the way. You won't want to miss this story on the Covenant Eyes podcast. Usually the first on the cycle here is some sort of trigger that triggers a moment of, whether it be a moment of weakness, a thought that pops into our mind, or even just sort of external things that drive someone in that direction, that begin to sort of open a door for them to consider going to look at pornography again. What were those triggers for you?
I think one of the triggers in my house growing up was something as simple as the JCPenney catalog. You know, we didn't have pornographic material in my house. My brother and I did find a pornographic magazine at a construction site one time and brought it home and had that for a while. But my triggers were things like magazines around the house. And especially as you go into your high school years and even college, those just seem like such kid things that I'm stimulated by magazines or the Sunday circulars, and gosh, people are going to think I'm weird if I talk about those things. And so it just pushes the secret down and hides it. And then a lot of times, even growing up, I would find my friendships were with, not with people, but with video games and television, and later that turned into the computer. That was something that I bonded with. I would bond with those types of media, and they were stimulating in their own ways. Even in non-sexual ways, they're just stimulating, and sure, you build a habit of, well, I'm going to go home, and the way that I relax is to go in front of the tube or go in front of the computer. And so I think that's something that began to develop at a young age. Then you throw into the media that you're looking at and the things you're spending time with, you start to throw sexually stimulating images, and time alone is a trigger, and those two things are deadly on top of the lust that's growing. I had a lot of different girlfriends growing up, and an interest in girls early on, and just a longing for attention. And I think that's something that definitely carried into my pastorate. And you get a lot of attention, and you're kind of you get a lot of people looking to you and appreciating you. And I think those are things that I didn't realize that I had problems with. So there's not a singular root cause.
Right.
There's many causes and many
triggers,
things that have to be unpacked.
And so as these triggers would come along, typically what behavioral psychologists call SUDs, seemingly unimportant decisions,
mm-hmm.
these little decisions that just get us closer to that object of our addiction.
Yeah.
Those little things, you know, for instance, I know for me, when I was dealing, really struggling with pornography temptations a lot, and wrestling through my own addictions, often something that I would say to myself was something like, I'm just going to go check my email now. That for me was a suds. It was a seemingly unimportant decision that was actually a very important decision I was making at the moment, that had my sensors been up, I would have recognized, no, I have an underlying motive in doing
Right.
this. What was that for you?
I don't remember how it was, Luke, but whether I caught some sort of banner ad or whether I just searched for something that was in the sensual direction, or I have friends that they'll search for a Hollywood actor girl just to get a picture. You know, those are the small things that open the doors. And then it turns into searching and searching for images and more sophisticated, complicated searching.
Usually following these seemingly unimportant decisions that move us towards the indulgence, then there's the moments of indulgence where there's this the hungry sort of searching for the images or the videos that you want to see, as well as there are sort of these very defeated interpretations of the problem where we continually indulge because we justify it and say, well, I'm already in the hole. I've already
Yes.
dug myself into this thing. I might as well stay here. I might as well just keep going. Can
Right.
you can you identify with that kind of continued binging?
Oh, definitely, because, you know, I step over a line of searching, and then it's, well, gosh, I've already stepped over this line, and I sometimes my guilt over that would turn me off, and I turn the computer off and just go into a self-condemnation phase. But then other times it would be, well, I've already messed up, and I might as well go ahead and do more or have a binge. And how is that going to be any worse than stepping over the line one time? And
right.
I have to say that's a lie. When we head towards sin, when we sin, it's a step toward death and destruction. And
absolutely,
taking more and more steps or saying, well, I'm just going to give up and binge, that really is steps away from God and toward more destruction. And I think a lot of times, Luke, when I was in a lustful mode, I wasn't thinking straight. I had tunnel vision, and all I was thinking about was those images and those women, and how can I get the biggest sexual high here?
Jeff said that there would be days or hours that go by, and he hadn't even realized. You know, it was the end of the day, and it was time to go home, and he had spent all this time on the computer. He had no idea so much time was going by.
Yeah, I'd be kind of in an internet trance.
Right.
So I would go and act out. I would sin, and then feel this immediate shame and guilt.
Yeah.
And turn the computer off. But then the thing that is helping me feel better is looking at these images and giving into lust. And so I might turn the computer off at work for an hour or two or stop searching and then find myself back there again going, well, you know, I'm feeling better about myself and maybe it wasn't so bad, and we have all this deceptive self-talk.
Yeah, and some people, they will go into those prolonged periods of sobriety, if you will, but usually what gets them there is this sort of act of penance where
yes.
they're done with the indulgence, they've gratified themselves, they're done, and they're moving on now, and the guilt has gotten strong enough in their heart where suddenly it's this penance. We're gonna try to do something good, we're gonna try to pray more, we're gonna try to be more active and do something that just sort of tries to make ourselves more or less feel better about ourselves and what we've done. You know, even though we've committed these sins, we want to do some sort of act of penance. Was that part of your experience as well?
Oh, definitely. I wanted to make up for it, and so I'm gonna work extra hard, God, to not do this, and I'm gonna fight it, and I go read my Bible or memorize some verses or do the spiritual thing. And I, you know, I, as a pastor, I felt like that I just needed to be confessed up to God by the time I got into the pulpit. I felt like
Right.
that I might have troubles during the week, but as long as I was sincere and repentant and or just sorrowful, then God would somehow bless my sermon. And One of the real deceptive things for ministers is that just because God is working around you in your ministry doesn't mean that you're okay. Just because
right.
God is blessing your ministry and growing your church or growing your influence or making you flavor of the month doesn't mean that you're okay. You can't have these secrets. And, you know, God works in spite of us a lot of times. God cares for lost people, and God cares for the hurting. I just think that I was becoming so damaged and trapped that God needed to pull the plug before I went in some really serious directions with my pornography and my lust.
And praise God that he did. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
For you, other than the crisis event, which obviously shook your world, what really breaks that cycle?
I think just an awareness, an awakening to the consequences. And I would say the thought of losing my family, thought of losing my wife, after the intervention that at the time was the worst day of my life, I had to go pick up one of my sons from a friend's house, and was just broken. I burst out in tears on the way over there. I had called my best friend and confessed, and then I had to pick up my son, and he came running to me and gave me a hug and embraced me and said, "Daddy, I'm glad to see you." And that was the first time that I ever thought, gosh, I have to go home and tell my wife, and I might lose my kids. I think one of the things, Luke, is I began to see who I really was. I didn't think that I was that bad. I didn't even think I was that bad of a sinner. But I began to see how broken I was and how messed up I was. I also think there was a drive in me to not be broken. In my pride, I don't like to be messed up and broken.
It reminds me of what Isaiah says in Isaiah chapter 55 when he says, "Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and he who has no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread and labor for that which does not satisfy?" And I think about what he says there about those with empty pockets, with no money, with nothing to bring to the table, that he invites those people to come and experience the sweet wine and milk of God's presence, that they are to eat of his bread. Those are the people invited to God's table. And I think about how, just what you're saying there, the pride, the unwillingness to be broken, the unwillingness to be the one who has nothing to bring to the table, that Isaiah makes it pretty clear there that drinking from God's well is for the truly thirsty. Not for the people who think they can get their water elsewhere or think they have another cistern to run to, but it is for people who are desperately thirsty and know they don't have a penny to their name. And I just celebrate the fact that in your life and my life and the lives of other people I know, that God brought us to that point and
right.
said, "You really have nothing."
You've been listening to part two of Jeff and Marcia's story. In the next portion, Marcia will share about the pains and hurt she faced as a result of Jeff's addiction. She will also openly share about the work God has done in her life since the day Jeff's sinful habits have come to light. I am your host, Luke Gilkerson, and you've been listening to the Covenant Eyes Podcast.